Good morning.
Good morning.
Jeff Jones for the appellant, Thurman Spencer. First of all, I wanted to say I intend to address claim one, to focus on claim one in the opening brief in my argument, but of course I'm prepared to answer questions regarding any of the claims that are certified in this case. With regard to claim one, the appellant was convicted of two counts of attempted murder based on arson events that occurred in 1998 and in 2000. The conviction in 2000 for the 2000 firebombing was supported by some circumstantial evidence. The 1998 offense, however, was the prosecution's case there was based entirely, by my reading, entirely based on the similarity to the 2000 event, and as well as the prior act evidence based on the 1998 event. With regard to that fire in 1998, the defense produced evidence that another individual, substantial evidence, another individual may have started that fire. It produced evidence that a woman named Tracy Wallace had threatened a member of that household that was firebombed with multiple threats of physical violence the very day before the fire occurred. The day after the fire, she called up this person, Renee Martin.
How does it feel to have a house full of fire? The problem in this case, though, is that the trial judge conducted an extensive hearing, even extended the long arm of the court to try to track down some of these people, Wallace and Martin and everything else. And after looking at this very, very carefully, I think the trial judge did look at it carefully, concluded under Section 352 that it simply was too attenuated, it was going to cause confusion, and so ruled it out. And hasn't that been acknowledged by all the Supreme Court cases as a sufficient basis to knock out this? I mean, the judge didn't say exculpatory evidence with respect to somebody else might have done it. I don't want to hear that. The judge did exactly the opposite, heard it, and ruled under 352 that it just doesn't going to cut it. Why isn't that enough under the Supreme Court precedent? The courts even talk about that.
First of all, the Tracy Wallace, there was no problem finding her, just to address a point you made at the beginning of what you said. There wasn't a problem finding Tracy Wallace, but they cut it off at that point. She was never brought in.
Because the judge had determined that there was no need to even bring her in.
Yes, indeed.
Right.
That's true. Right. Well, regarding Holmes versus South Carolina and its and its antecedents, in that case, the court did address a different type of rule. And that rule, as you note, it's the opposite kind from 352, and the court approved rules like 352. Here it's the application of Evidence Code 352 that's the problem, and is an unreasonable application of Holmes. Because the problem Holmes had with the rule in South Carolina was that it excluded evidence that had a strong logical connection to central issues in the case. It excluded substantial exculpatory evidence. In this case, the court didn't do that by applying a rule like the South Carolina Supreme Court did, but it did it by unreasonably applying Evidence Code 352. And it's not a state law challenge. It goes to the right to prevent a defense that Mr. Spencer had the right to prevent.
Due process challenge.
Indeed. The right to, well, due process and Sixth Amendment, the right to present a defense as stated in Holmes. And
that's a tough case to make on habeas.
Most cases are, Your Honor.
Right.
With AEDPA. It's a tough standard to meet.
Didn't the court say, well, there may have been an attenuated motive, but there was no opportunity?
Yes. The California Court of Appeal ruled that all that was shown was opportunity. All that was shown was motive. The Tracy Wallace had the motive, but no opportunity. I think that is a misreading. Entirely an unreasonable reading of the record in this case.
Well, what's the evidence of any opportunity?
Well, the opportunity is she, I think a reasonable jury could infer from her statement that how does it feel to have your house full of smoke and the threat she made that she was the one who committed the fire.
That's not opportunity. Well, that's not evidence of opportunity.
I'd say the California Court of Appeal relied on evidence that she couldn't have done it. That she didn't know the address.
She didn't know the address.
But I think that was a cherry picking and a unreasonable.
Well, but there is evidence that she didn't know of the address, and there was none that she did.
I think the evidence that she didn't isn't. I don't. I believe the evidence that she didn't isn't is what was misunderstood by the California Supreme Court.
But you're not suggesting, are you, that the California courts couldn't rely on that?
They could rely on it.
That's the end of your case.
I don't think so, Your Honor, for this reason. If you take, given the constitutional right to present a defense, Now, if you take evidence like the testimony of Renee Martin regarding what Tracy Wallace said, if it could go either way, two reasonable interpretations. Now, this is the ultimate standard under AEDPA's reasonableness. But with regard to the right to present a defense, if you have a fact like what Tracy Wallace said and a reasonable jury could go either way, I think that the reasonableness under AEDPA is, you know, that applies to the entire question, did this evidence have a strong logical connection to the issues? You know, to the central issue in the case, was it exculpatory? And if you have evidence like this that a reasonable jury could go either way on it, well, that clearly is a question for the jury, I think, under the constitutional standard and the standard of review in AEDPA in this
case. That's not the standard under AEDPA, if a reasonable jury could go either way. No,
well, no, I didn't mean
that. That's not our standard.
No, I didn't mean that, but I think the standard under AEDPA, of course, is that it has to be objectively unreasonable.
Right.
But I'm saying it's the overall conclusion that has to be objectively unreasonable by the California Court of Appeal. The application of Holmes versus South Carolina, not every link in the chain. And my point is that if in applying Holmes versus South Carolina, you have potentially exculpatory evidence, the defense wants to show a third party did this, and the defendant presents evidence that a reasonable jury could decide it either way, that becomes an unreasonable application of Holmes to say the jury can't hear that evidence.
Basically, I think you're asking us to go back and second guess the trial judge's weighing of the evidence. And on habeas, we can't do that. We have to give deference to the findings that were made by the state judge. How do you get around that, our obligation in that regard?
Well, I think it's not a question of second guessing a finding, but I mean the evidence is there on the transcript. We have what Renee Martin said, and I think that the Court of Appeals interpretation of that evidence wasn't of saying that this could have shown that she didn't know the address. I'm not saying that in and of itself is unreasonable. I'm saying a reasonable jury could have come out either way on it.
Doesn't help you though.
Well, it's the same with if we look at Holmes versus South Carolina, that evidence, if it's found credible, it could exonerate the defendant. It wasn't clearly an exoneration. The point for the Supreme Court in that case was the jury has to hear it because it's potentially exculpatory. It comes down to a credibility issue, and I think that's what we have here. We have evidence that.
Well, but the problem is that evidence was never vetted in the state court.
It wasn't entirely vetted, but I think.
Right.
Nor was it vetted here beyond the hearing that Judge Trott referred to.
That's vetting it, though.
Well, to an extent, certainly they heard Renee Martin's testimony.
Your complaint is that it wasn't delved into as deeply as you thought the court should have gone. That's your complaint. But it was vetted by the court, and the court decided after hearing so much of the evidence that it didn't need to hear any more evidence to make the determination that this was too attenuated and that it would take the jury away from its main task of looking at the evidence that was pertinent to this case. So I don't understand how that becomes a constitutional violation.
Well, I think it becomes one because Mr. Spencer had the right to present a defense. He had the constitutional right to, under Holmes versus South Carolina and the cases it relies on, to present evidence that it tends to show that a third party did it. It has a strong.
Not all evidence.
A strong logical connection to a central issue in the case, I believe, is the language in Holmes.
Yeah, well, Holmes, you've read our Cujo case, I'm certain, by now.
Yes, sir.
They even quote Holmes, well-established rules of evidence permit trial judges to exclude evidence if its probative value is outweighed by certain other factors such as unfair prejudice, confusion of the issues, or potential to mislead the jury. That sounds like 52 to me, 352.
Indeed. I don't disagree with that. That under Holmes, the rule that the court had a problem with in Holmes is essentially the court in Holmes doesn't have a problem with evidence code 352. That's the type of rule that they approve. It's the application, but I think the problem that it had with the rule of the South Carolina Supreme Court applied was that it excluded evidence that was potentially exculpatory, that had a strong logical connection to a central issue.
So your case really boils down to thinking that the trial judge here made a mistake that was completely unreasonable under 352.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Did you want to save time for rebuttal? I think we understand your argument.
Yes, Your Honor.
Let's hear from the State. All right. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the Court. Justin Riley on behalf of the warden. The appellant is basically arguing that the State court's application of Section 352 of the Evidence Code was so unreasonable that it somehow violated due process. This Court can't decide that on federal habeas review. This Court can't apply a State statute in this manner differently than the State court did. Can't disagree with the State court's application of its own rules.
Well, we can if the application was so outrageous that it deprived the defendant of the opportunity to present a defense.
Right. And that would have to be in a specific situation such as in Holmes when it was a complete denial of a defense because of an unconstitutional application. Not just we disagree with the way they applied Section 352.
Are you saying we can never look at the way a judge has applied 352?
No, 352 has to violate, under federal habeas review, the application of Section 352 has to violate a clearly established rule established by the Supreme Court. For instance, in Holmes v. South Carolina, the rule was very similar to California Evidence Code Section 352, but the South Carolina courts were applying it in such a way as it became unconstitutional. And by that, I mean they were taking the evidence and basically doing the jury's job. They were weighing the third-party exculpatory evidence, the proposed evidence, against the prosecution's evidence. Basically, they were holding a mini-trial. Here, on the other hand, the state court was just doing a run-of-the-mill application of Section 352 in which they were doing a relevance versus probative value, relevance-probative-value weighing of the evidence versus undue prejudice. And that's what the appellant is disagreeing with here. It's just an ordinary application of the rule. Second, the judge had at least three separate hearings on this evidence, as Your Honors recognized, offered to find witnesses for the defendant, and still there wasn't enough evidence. And then there was a harmlessness analysis done by the state court, which appellant still can't overcome. I'd love to answer any other questions, but I'm prepared to submit it on the briefing.
It appears there are no other questions.
Thank you,
counsel. Rebuttal.
2 points, Your Honor. Your Honors, briefly, regarding the argument that I'm impermissibly challenging the State's application of Evidence Code 352, in any case where you're talking about the right to present a defense in California, the State's always going to be applying that rule. They can apply it incorrectly, and that's not the basis for a constitutional challenge, that there's a due process right to have that law correctly applied. It's simply State rules of evidence don't preempt constitutional principles, whether it's the right to confrontation or the right to present a defense. I'm not challenging Evidence Code 352 at all. I'm challenging the State court's evidentiary ruling because it violates my client's right to present a defense. And to that point, the lack of opportunity, the California Court of Appeal reasoned that Tracy Wallace didn't have opportunity because she called right after the fire, and she knew about the fire, and she made a statement that I believe a reasonable jury could interpret as taking credit for the fire, for gloating about what she did. And the Court of Appeal reasoned, well, she saw this because the fire was on TV, and Renee Martin, her intended target, was on TV.
Now, did Wallace testify before this judge?
No. Wallace did not.
The investigator for the defendant presented a report from Wallace.
The defense attorney told the judge what his investigator had said.
Did the defense attorney ask for that person to be subpoenaed into court to testify in front of the judge? I didn't see anything like that.
Nor did I, Your Honor.
They could have. So the defense attorney settled on the report.
Well, I think the defense was seeking to have Ms. Wallace subpoenaed for trial. I think the trial court's ruling it didn't go beyond that. I think the defense didn't have an opportunity to do that because they got as far as they did and the trial court made its ruling.
Well, but I didn't see any intervention by the defense attorney saying we need to bring this person in. The defense attorney seemed to be satisfied with the investigator's report. And the report pretty much got rid of any opportunity.
Well, the report, no, I think the report actually didn't do that. I think the report, for instance, the California Court of Appeal, as I was saying before, she noted that Wallace could have seen Martin on TV. That's how she knew about the fire, saw it on TV, and then made the call just to, you know, give her a hard time about it. But the defense investigator reported that Tracy Wallace denied having seen anything about the fire on TV, said she didn't know about the fire. And that's a conflict in the record that undercuts the California.
And said she didn't know where Martin lived until she found out later.
I think she simply denied knowing what Martin looks like or even being aware. Well, she denied knowing what she looks like. I don't recall the address issue, whether she knew the address being raised at all. I'm sure she would not have admitted knowing the address if she'd been asked. But her testimony is contrary to Martin's in a lot of ways, and that's what I mean by the jury could take Martin's comments and hearing Wallace's denials, that's rather incriminating to Tracy Wallace.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you
to both counsel for your arguments in this case. The case just argued is submitted for decision by the court.